From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. San Francisco yesterday became the first major city in the U.S. to ban the use of facial recognition software by the police and other agencies. The city's Board of Supervisors approved the ban by a vote of 8-1 yesterday, and we'll discuss the ban and use of facial recognition, which critics say violates privacy and is biased against people of color. Then at 9:30, a look back at San Francisco's battle against the bubonic plague. After a Chinese immigrant in 1900 died from the plague, racist quarantine measures were enacted in Chinatown. And we'll talk with David K. Randall about his new book, Black Death at the Golden Gate, The Race to Save America from the Bubonic Plague. That's all next, after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A vote to ban facial recognition technology in San Francisco passed 8-1 by the Board of Supervisors yesterday. The ban, the first for a major U.S. city, includes the county sheriff's department and city police, but not individuals or businesses. City agencies will also be required to gain approval before acquiring automatic license plate readers or other types of surveillance technology. Critics say the technology violates privacy and is biased against people of color, while supporters say it is inevitable and point to potential benefits to public safety, among other uses. We're going to talk about the ban, and we want to hear from you. Do you support it, or you think it goes too far? You can give us a call now at 866-733-6786. That number again, toll-free, is 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org. Joining us now is San Francisco Board of Supervisors member Aaron Peskin, who authored the Stop Secret Surveillance Ordinance. And welcome, Supervisor Peskin.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. We'll also say good morning to Daniel Castro, who's joining us for this segment. He's Vice President of Information Technology and Innovation Foundation, which opposes the ban. Welcome, Daniel Castro.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Let me begin, if I may, Aaron Peskin, with you. I know you want this to be both nationally and internationally recognized, and it is probably going to go through in Oakland as well. But the justification has a lot to do with the inaccuracy of this and really racial justice, because the inaccuracy seems to be particularly where dark-skinned people are concerned, and also the whole Orwellian factor. This is maybe too big brother?
Yeah, there's no question that the technology in its current state is not ready for prime time. We all know the statistics, including the fact that this technology has misidentified 28 members of Congress, and when misused can be very dangerous. But there is a much more fundamental underlying principle at stake here, which is the Orwellian Big Brother aspect of it. And even when the technology is perfected, I think this is a genie we want to try to put back in the bottle.
The argument against that, though, is that it's a genie that is in development, that it is evolving, and that it also provides a great deal of security, potentially.
Well, I think that's a question society has to ask itself. That's the question I was asking my colleagues in the public yesterday, which is, how much of your privacy and how much of your liberty do you want to give up for security? And I'm trying to strike that balance with this legislation, which, by the way, goes far beyond the facial recognition ban. It's actually a surveillance use policy piece of legislation.
Well, the legislation, in fact, means that any kind of surveillance technology will have to go through an approval by the Board of Supervisors, right?
That's correct. What has to go through the Board of Supervisors is a use policy wherein the government agency that uses a surveillance technology needs to tell us how they use it, how long they store data, who they share it with, who has access to it. And I'd like to say that this is a San Francisco first. It is not. We're actually the seventh city in Northern California to do it. The county of Santa Clara actually pioneered this 3 years ago. State Senator Jerry Hill actually tried to make this use policy aspect of the legislation state law, which would have required all 58 counties in the state to do it. But the law enforcement lobby, which is powerful in Sacramento managed to kill it.
Yeah, even the New York Times said San Francisco's the first city, so thanks for that amending. This means also license plate readers and, well, body cameras, biometric technology. There's a whole host of things here.
That's correct, and it also means learning about technologies that the city has acquired that we as decision makers know nothing about.
Well, what about city contracts?
So when you say city contracts, we the city enters into contracts to procure these technologies, and those would be subject to a use policy. Does that make any sense to you, Michael?
Yeah, it does, but maybe you could flesh it out a little bit more for our lay audience.
So, for instance, if the San Francisco Police Department wanted to enter into a contract with the purveyor of license plate scanners, the police department, would have to come to the Board of Supervisors with a use policy as to how those license plate scanners would be used, how long the data would be stored. Do they share it with the district attorney? Do they share it with the public defender? Is it available to the media? What individuals in the department have access to it? That would be the subject of the use policy, and that would come to the board for approval prior to our appropriating funds for the acquisition of said technology.
We're talking to Supervisor Aaron Peskin, a member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, about facial recognition technology, which has now been banned in San Francisco. Aaron, police are not even deploying this presently, are they?
That's right, which is a wonderful thing. It's not too late for San Francisco. This is, I think we've done this in a timely way before our police department or other departments are enticed into acquiring this technology. So we're not getting into a fight with the police department because, indeed, they have not, unlike some other police departments, acquired this kind of technology.
Let me get Daniel Castro into this. He's Vice President of Information Technology and Innovation Foundation. And Daniel Castro, this is still an evolving technology, which is something, I guess, it really has to be put into this whole equation. But consider from your perspective, a ban should have maybe been a moratorium, or it's coming too inclusively and shouldn't be done?
That's right. I think there's a lot of safeguards that can be put in place that fall short of a ban. I think most people share the same goals of ensuring that any system in place is fair and accurate, that it's used appropriately. But the way to do that is to, for example, set accuracy requirements or performance standards for any technology that's acquired by the police department, or to, set guidelines and policy on how it can be used. The problem with the ban is it effectively limits the police from ever experimenting and piloting this technology so they can use it effectively. And what we've seen today in other cities around the country is that it can be used successfully. So, for example, in Maryland, when there was a shooting in the Capitol Gazette, the police were able to quickly identify who the shooter was using facial recognition technology. This is something that's being deployed in the field now. It's being deployed successfully.
It's also deployed in airports and at borders, and you have people like Jonathan Turley who have weighed in and said it can be a valuable security tool, particularly in an age of terrorism.
That's right. It's a very effective tool right now. When you think about large public events, there's opportunities to use facial recognition to identify somebody who's made a known threat against this type of venue. It's effective in schools if you know there's someone that shouldn't be there. It's effective at doing what police are already doing today, which is manually going through photos and trying to identify people. That's something a computer can do faster and more efficiently. So it's a way to save taxpayers money. It's a way to get more police out on the street instead of doing administrative work.
It's also a way police
There's really no reason.
Police can get leads, I presume, right?
Absolutely. It's a great investigative tool. That's how a lot of police departments are using it. Nobody's using it right now to, automatically arrest someone, which is kind of the fear that the computer might identify a suspect and the police will go out and immediately arrest someone. That's not happening anywhere in the country. What it's really being used to do is make police more efficient, more productive, and that's a good thing.
So you're feeling it's too premature. We're not going the way of China yet, huh?
We're not even close to being in China, and that's the problem here. I think we're conflating some of the problems we see in other countries with the opportunities to use the technology effectively in the United States. We should be embracing effective use of technology rather than putting bans in place that make it so we can't put other safeguards in place to find that right balance between using technology and protecting people's privacy and safety.
Well, we got a lot of listeners who want to express their opinions, and in fact, I invite you to join us in the segment. You can do that at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or you can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email forum@kqed.org. Let me go to some callers here, and let's go first to Jeff. Jeff, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi there, Michael.
Hi.
I have a question about the impact of California Consumer Privacy Act with storing this data. Will consumers have the ability to ask to have this data deleted? And what kind of control do consumers have over this? I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Do you know the answer to that, Aaron Peskin?
So that's precisely why we are enacting this law, is so that we can start to have a public conversation about how people's private DNA, the private data, is used. The legislation itself is silent. It actually talks about what the department has to present to us, but it does not talk about whether or not the board should or can approve it. I'll be the first to say that this is an evolving area of technology and an evolving area of law. The legislation that the Board of Supervisors passed yesterday was amended repeatedly in a long, 5-month-long process, and I assume will be amended over time. I think it's something that we will look back at and realize was something aimed at transparency that hopefully will make our communities safer.
I'm wondering, Daniel Castro, speaking about communities being safer and this whole issue of racial justice, what you say about the data that's been used for the ban. That is, Amazon actually had a whole facial recognition mismatch of 28 lawmakers who were confused with mugshots, and disproportionate misidentification went on of people. The ACLU conducted a similar test, people of color. I'm just wondering what you say to that argument that we need a ban because there's that kind of inequity built into this.
Well, the ACLU study in question, you know, it wasn't really a study. It wasn't anything that was peer-reviewed. It's not anything that's been published openly. We've even asked the ACLU to make available the data and code they use to do that analysis, and they haven't done it. Amazon attempted to replicate their study, and what they showed is when you use the thresholds for analysis that they recommend to police departments, that the error rate drops significantly. So there are a lot of attempts to, first of all, there's a lot of different facial recognition systems. As I said earlier, I think a good step forward would be to set an accuracy requirement, and that could include a racial bias component to it, so that no police departments are buying systems that have problems there. But we actually have federal testing of different facial recognition systems. In the most recent testing from, I think it was February of this year, in some of the matching systems, the systems are actually more accurate on darker-skinned individuals than lighter-skinned. So it really varies based on the particular application you're looking at and the particular system you're using, as well as, of course, the types of photos that are being collected and how they're being used. If you're looking at a low-light versus bright-light condition, the accuracy of the system might vary. So that's why we need good performance requirements developed. But, you know, the ACLU is really, you know, they put out what was effectively bad science, and I'm concerned that that was the basis for many of these decisions, and they haven't really been justified in any other testing.
All right, let me bring on some more callers. I've got a caller here who is a corporate security professional. Daniel, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I guess I just wanted to make the comment that we are definitely looking at these technologies because we recognize, at least on the corporate security side, that they are critical in terms of protecting our communities and our populations. I think the ban is absolutely excessive. Your guest that's mentioning that controls would be a better approach is absolutely right. Data privacy, there's a great model out of Europe in terms of GDPR that kind of covers how to protect data and how to get rid of it. And your guest also is right about the fact that the police departments are already doing it. They're just doing it with boots on the ground and a clipboard, where this is, would allow to be a lot better. And it would allow not just looking at threats, but also potentially exploited children, missing children. There's a lot of different applications.
Yeah, what about those applications, Aaron Peskin? Yeah, thank you for those comments, Daniel. Good to hear from you. I appreciate the call. Aaron Peskin?
So as you noted at the beginning of the show, Michael, the ban applies to the government. It does not apply to private third parties or businesses or individuals who are welcome should they want to, you know, purchase that technology. But if you look at the history, not only of San Francisco, but of the United States, we have a history of spying on people. San Francisco did that in the 60s, generally against marginalized communities. Most of the folks that they were spying on were innocent and were being spied on because of their political views or political activities. The FBI did that. The fundamental, invasive, pernicious aspect of facial recognition technology, which I think people really need to understand, invades every part of the public realm. where you are constantly being surveilled. You have no privacy, whether you're in a park, walking down a street. I think that that is a technology that government should not have, that will ultimately be misused and abused. It will make people feel like they are living in a security state rather than a safe state. And I really think it's a technology that the world will live to regret.
Well, here's a caller who is on your side. David, let's get you on here. Good morning.
Morning. This sounds like Daniel's too much of a lobbyist for the industry. I mean, this technology is just too tempting. Once we accept it, he was talking about a moratorium instead of a ban, the government will just rush to expand it outside the view of the public. And once we accept it, get over that hurdle. Even if it's 100% accurate, the government will keep the data forever. We already have seen existing retention laws already broken with no accountability. I think it was TSA and passport data, where you, how many times you've come and gone from the country. You know, it's none of the government's business where I've driven for the last 5 to 10 years that they can put all that data together.
There is a danger of abuse here, Daniel Castro, isn't there, on many fronts?
I agree that it's not the government's business where we've been traveling. And I think that's why, again, we can put policies in place to prevent that. For example, you would want a warrant requirement to be able to access, historical data on someone's movement. I think we can also put retention limits in place for how this data is stored. But I think what's missing from this conversation is the fact that using facial recognition can actually increase privacy for people. Because right now we'll have surveillance cameras out there in the public that people are monitoring, that humans are looking to see where you go. And in the future, if we use facial recognition, we can computerize all that. So there's nobody actually watching anybody. And the data is only used when there's a specific crime to be investigated. And it's only used very specific safeguards, which aren't in place today. And that's what we can move forward towards.
I wanted to move to a question, and I'll go to you on this, Supervisor Peskin. George wants to know, what will prevent a private sector firm from deploying facial ID technology and selling its data to the police?
Well, in the case of San Francisco, the law is that the police cannot acquire that technology, and the Board of Supervisors will not appropriate funds for the acquisition of that particular technology.
And another listener, Elliot, writes again about racial injustice with this technology. He says, when I was in grad school, a guest speaker from U.S. Customs told us that they were finding facial recognition technology to be wildly inaccurate when used on people of African descent. Is that still the case? And Daniel Castro, you were saying things are getting better, but that still is the case, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they've done better, and the technology has changed significantly. I mean, the facial recognition has been developed for over 20 years. It's only in the last few years that the development's accelerated in terms of the accuracy, and it continues to improve, and it improves on two fronts. One, they're getting better at the algorithms they're using, and two, they're getting better at using more inclusive data sets. One of the things that my think tank's been working on is calling for the federal government to develop training data sets. That way we can have good commercial testing of racial bias and have good performance standards. Again, there's a lot of very clear positive ways to move forward, and bans just hold us back from doing that.
And what about hacking, Aaron Peskin? Where does that figure into all this?
I was going to bring that up. And when Mr. Castro speaks about the fact that all of this can be computerized and automated, all of this can be leaked to nefarious, third parties. We saw that happen with Facebook as to some 80 million users. We saw that relative to the hacking of our elections in the United States of America in 2016. It just scares the hell out of me.
Let me bring another caller on, and that's you, Aaron. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is more about policy and not about accuracy, but who would be held responsible in the case of a misidentification? Would it be the entity implementing the software, or would it be the manufacturer of the software? I'll take the answer off.
All right. Thank you for the question. To you again, Supervisor.
Well, let me tell you a story. In 2009 in San Francisco, a police car that had a license plate reader that misscanned a car, which turned out was being driven by a city employee, a Muni driver, the scan showed that it was a stolen car, but it was a misidentified scan. The police held this woman at gunpoint for 30 minutes. She sued the city and county of San Francisco, and we settled in 2015 for $495,000. How's that for an answer?
It's an answer. And here's another question, perhaps from a listener named Damien. Damien, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. I think it's a shame that we don't use technology. The police are outnumbered. We're under budget cuts. There's really no hope for San Francisco. I mean, they let out cop killers and sanctuary state felons out onto the streets to jeopardize the public safety of good citizens. And I feel that if you got nothing to hide, this is the 21st century. We got to keep moving forward. I mean, they take facial pictures of you at Disneyland when there's a problem somewhere. Everybody wants to see the photos. Everybody wants to see who it was. They need to do it.
What do you say, Damien? I'm sorry. Thank you for that call, because I want to go right to Aaron Peskin on that. That's an argument that I think resonates for a lot of people, that this is another tool that police can have, and we've got problems that the police have to solve.
Let me just give you some facts, which is San Francisco's violent crime rate is at its lowest ebb in years, as is the case throughout urban America, where violent crime is down. What makes communities safe is when people make their communities safe, not when computers make their communities safe. I am a strong supporter of our sanctuary city laws, which is precisely why technology like facial recognition software is pernicious.
Here's a listener who says, I think it's a little silly to try and pass this ban since users have already given up their faces to the most powerful facial recognition in the world, Facebook. And let me go back, if I could, Daniel Castro, to you just to get a quick response to where hacking comes into this in your judgment.
Well, I think we have, we trust our banks to be digital. We trust our healthcare records to be digital. This is the future. I mean, this is what we're moving, and we're going to continue to do that. I think the main issue is for the average person, if there's a crime that's committed, whether it's their Amazon package is stolen off the doorstep or that it's a violent crime, there's a photo of the suspect, they're going to want the police to do something about it quickly. And I think, the police saying, sorry, we're not going to be able to help you, you'll have better luck looking yourself on Facebook, is ridiculous. And we need to be having policies in place that allow the police to use the same technology that's being used around the world in other jurisdictions.
We're going to have to leave it there. Let me thank you, Daniel Castro. Daniel Castro, again, is Vice President of Information Technology and Innovative Foundation. Good to have you with us.
Thanks.
Thank you, Supervisor Peskin. Aaron Peskin, again, is a member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. Good to have you with us as well. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Michael.
And thank you, our listeners. We have another segment right up ahead. We're going to talk about San Francisco and the bubonic plague. Yes, you heard that right. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.